Blog Talk Radio.
Is a show that centers on the mission of Conscious Capitalism, an international organization started by Whole Foods co-founder and CEO John Mackey and Michael Strong, by featuring businesses who use business to elevate humanity. The Conscious Capitalist Show focuses on spreading the awareness of the Conscious Capitalism business framework and core principles of higher purpose, stakeholder orientation, conscious leadership, and conscious culture. Conscious capitalists are entrepreneurs and business owners who endeavor to create financial, intellectual, social, cultural, emotional, spiritual, physical, and ecological wealth for all their stakeholders. We are committed to making a positive, measurable difference in the world. Your host for the Conscious Capitalist is Christopher King, who goes by King. King is the president of the D.C. chapter of Conscious Capitalism and author of the new book titled Connecting with Intent, Why Social Capital is More Valuable Than Financial Capital. He is the founder and CEO of King Connections, a benefits corporation that is a business leveraging consulting firm that specializes in developing innovative, customized business systems. King Connections helps clients connect with intent to build, manage, and leverage social capital to create high-value, connected, engaged communities. King is a co-founder of the Conscious Success Academy, an online academy for empowering individuals to become mentally and financially free. King is a community activist and leader and is a board member of the Montgomery County Housing Partnerships. King is a writer, speaker, problem solver, and self-claim leveraging connector who believes that happiness in life is when you love unconditionally, serve dutifully, and live with intent. Ross Girardi.
Hello, listening audience, and welcome to today's show, The Conscious Capitalist. I'm your host, King, and looking forward to a great show today. I know that in the D.C. area, we've been hit with snow, and so most folks are pretty much digging out of that snow. I actually dug out the snow so I can make it to the studio to have and be present for the show today. So I'm excited about today's show because we're going to talk about being a conscious capitalist, how you can go about being a conscious capitalist or being that conscious leader, and it really comes down to how you are preparing your mind and your body mentally and physically. And so that's why I'm so excited about today's guest, because today's guest is a person who knows all about how to go about developing your conscious mind and becoming a conscious leader, because he believes in providing healthy food alternatives. And so allow me to introduce you all to today's guest. Chef Ivan Wallace, and Ivan Wallace was born in Philadelphia. He had a love for science and attended Hampton University to study physics and mathematics. He attended American University for Advanced Mathematics and Georgetown University to study radiation science as he worked for the National Institutes of Health as a health physicist in the Radiation Safety Department. He became an expert in emergency response and trained scientists who worked with radioactive chemicals in the biomedical research fields. When the scientists who worked with physicians to administer high doses of radionuclides to patients, Ivan began to study exposure and detoxing the body. Today, Ivan is a live food scientist and chef who has promoted his business and philosophy worldwide. He has lectured at Temple University for the past 10 years and will soon release the Physics of Food Recipe Guide to assist health-conscious customers through the natural process of foods. Chef Live Ives' Starfire cuisine has been showcased on Comcast TV Network. He enjoys farming his own herbs. Ives wants to live life and make the world a better haven for the yet unborn and those who he can touch on this earth while he's here on his journey. He is a traditional ruler and has been installed as the Ashanti African chief of the Ashanti clan of Ghana and has the honorable name of Nana Kwame Topra. I hope I said all that correctly. Welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show, Ivan.
Greetings. How are you today, Brother Chris?
Brother, I'm doing great, man. I tell everyone that, you know, as long as I can wake up in the morning and I'm blessed with the ability to hear, see, have sound mind, and be able to get out of bed and move, to me, I'm having a great day. It can only get better from there.
Oh, that's a blessing. Yeah, when I get out of bed, I kind of do some cat exercises like, salutations to the sun, or as your dog or cat may wake up, you know, you kind of look at the animals because they still have a lot to teach us. So I'm stretching out all my bones, joints, and everything before I go down and get my tea and juice and, you know, start my day off right. So it's been one of those rough winters, and we basically had to dig out today also, so even before I get out there and shovel snow, man, I have to do my deep breathing exercises. I had an herbalist down in Tacoma Park one time. He said, "This is your medicine kit." He gave me pure peppermint oil and Thai food oil. He said, "You'll never get sick." So I put the peppermint oil on my knuckle. That clears my esophagus out. And the Thai food oil, I rub in my hands, cover my mouth and nose, and basically just breathe that in, and that just opens up my lungs and, you know, gets my day started and just purifies the body. That was Brother Claiborne Earl. I haven't been in touch with him, but hopefully he's still down in PG County, still, you know, pushing his thing and healing the people down that way. But, yeah, it's a blessing to be alive. Nice sunny day. They're trying to melt some of the snow today, but our temperatures is really planning to drop. But anyway, I think this weather is also part of the cleansing process that Mother Earth needs to basically keep things in balance. So, you know, I may fret for a minute, but then I say, hey, everything's in God's hands. The Creator knows what He's doing. So I'm just trying to line everything up. Line up with that, and that's what I do with the Sunfire, Starfire food, which is also basically coined after one of my teachers, Dr. Aris Latham, who basically calls his Sunfire, but I work with a group that does a lot of work in Africa, Star Spirit. So I kind of co-opted the Star Fire food, meaning that the star, the closest one to us, is the sun. And the sun has done all the work. So basically all I do is basically get the creativity juices flowing and into me and students, and we just create cuisines from just a world of you know, plants that are here for us, plants, vegetables, herbs, grains, sea vegetables, and it's all on. So that's the main thing.
Okay.
And just, you know, the whole bringing community together. I mean, one thing we all can do is share food. So this whole thing really is about bringing folks together and kind of like, you know, creating dishes and, you know, sharing and uplifting everybody. So I know conscious capitalism is a concept, and a lot of some of my ingredients I get from Whole Foods, so, you know, it's good to be a part of a movement that's, you know, lifting up folks and definitely has a consciousness and basically a will to give back and lift up and even pay things forward. So, You know, I'm glad to be on your show, and, you know, we can take the conversation wherever you want to go, brother, so let's get it in.
All right, my brother, thank you for being on the show, and, you know, definitely love your energy. You know, that's the kind of energy we want our listening audience to really be able to tap into, and I feel that through the phone lines, and I'm sure they do as well. So let me begin by, because I know you spoke about where you are, so I know you're in Philadelphia, so I just want to put that out there for the listening audience in case they were wondering where you were as well. But let's begin with our first question. And you kind of actually, our second question, you answered our first question, which is what's the name of your organization or your name of your business and where that name derived from. So thank you for that. But let me ask you this. The way we look at things, I should say, as conscious leaders, we recognize that everything comes down to a story. And that's who we are here on this earth. We are all here to tell our story, you know, and tell our story, the actions that you do, the choices that you make, even the businesses that you start, they all go into your narrative. And so with that being said, my question is, what made you decide now to go about telling the world your story through Live Eye, Starfire Cuisine?
You know, I guess it's been lying cooking, really, and also raising a family, and also really being, I guess I didn't really know I was always into gerontology because I was like maybe the youngest male grandchild. And I took care and always hung around my grandfather, grandmother, great uncles. And, you know, when they were getting a little older, I was basically like, you know, their best friend. So, you know, learning how to cook and, you know, basically, my grandfather was a carpenter. He came from Jamaica, and I was like a little too young when he basically still was doing the work. So instead of learning how to swing that hammer and putting on roofs and, you know, building everything by hand, he basically, you know, showed me how to basically stay alive through eating. So, you know, sharp knife, you know, just different tools. I still could bang around in the kitchen. But the whole thing was really sitting with elders and really getting the whole concept of making food taste good, you know, even things I may not have liked. But over time, I understand, you know, the health benefits of certain things and then just different styles of cooking. And other relatives, you know, may have traveled here and there during World War II or Korean War. They brought back ways of cooking. So I kind of, like, learned a lot from my elders and then went away to college. And, you know, being from South Philly, you know, that's one of the little fast places, you know, that had speakeasies. There's a lot of history there. But, you know, in college, you know, you're doing certain things, but you learn how to survive. And I used to have, like, a little cafe in my apartment right over the bridge from Hampton Institute, not too far from City Hall. It was Washington Street. And Washington Street, you know, you would come over there, you know, kind of chill out. We would be grilling food. So I was famous, you know, with shish kebab, seasoning, you know, different meats and fish on sticks with a lot of vegetables, making it look colorful. But being from Philly, the cheesesteaks was the thing. I had a partner. He was from New York. You know, we always joke. They call them heroes up there. But for the most part, I basically, you know, showed them how I really like to cook cheesesteaks, you know, chicken cheesesteaks, and even mushroom, you know, vegetarian cheesesteaks. So we was getting on a roll and had so many people coming through, we didn't really have to worry about any of our utilities, just the, you know. So I guess when you're sharing with people, chilling, you know, up studying, those cheesesteaks, you know, came in handy. And, you know, I kind of passed, you know, the whole Philly vibe on, like, really making a nice sandwich and, you know, making it cohesive. You know, sometimes you pull the bread out a little bit and put the cheese, but my whole thing is you do a stir fry, almost put it in a square, put your cheese on the bread. If you want to make a cheesesteak hoagie, you can put lettuce, tomatoes, put the cheese on top, but you put the bread into the pan and let the cheese melt and everything comes cohesive. You sometimes see people, you know, put the steak into the bread and all that. No, you got to kind of let it all just vibe and just, you know, make all the ingredients love each other. That's the way we talk about it, where, you know, you're just putting your hands and your love into the food. So just that whole story really of, like, just dealing with trying to make everything taste good and really learning about herbs, seasonings, and breads and everything just growing up, it all came to a point when you start, you know, having family and children and everything. So, you know, you want them to have, you know, the best of food, this and that. So that's when I basically started, you know, touching on. I had another grandfather that lived in Chicago from Mississippi. So I had spent a lot of time in the Deep South in Mississippi when they retired and moved back to Chicago. Spent a lot of summers in Chicago, loved that city. But going back to Mississippi was an eye-opening thing. But there I learned how to farm a lot, and even in Chicago, my grandfather could grow almost everything in the short winter, the short summers of Chicago, so-called short, everything he grew down south, he could grow up north. So me and my sister learned how to take care of gardens, urban gardens, really, in Chicago from the time we were like 6, 7, on up to like 13 before they moved back to Mississippi, and then they had bigger farms, or I had other relatives that had farms, and even the movie, The Time to Kill, was filmed on my plant, the Samuel Jackson movie, where he defends his daughter from the racist that killed and raped his little girl. I used to play on that land. That's that basically the 4-H camp that one of my great aunts had. And the movie basically was filmed on that land, and you can still go to Canton, Mississippi, and see that land. We recently sold it, but, you know, growing up there and then meeting some of the sharecropper families that lived there, we used to go hunting and basically, you know, fishing and everything there. But, you know, just even learning from, you know, folks that are in the country and how they season things. I wasn't really into eating a lot of the foods, but, you know, I just learned a lot. And, you know, that kind of brought me into just the way of, like, just looking at life, how other people survive and just, you know, coming together and eating a meal or going to gather or hunt and, you know, do what you have to do to get it. But, you know, it's really just a blessing when you just talk to folks, elders, and, you know, make a way out of no way. You know, we're kind of used to that just with how we survive in the in this world. And, you know, we've, you know, that's when we can get into the history of food, development of different methods of cooking. So it's always been just something of just striving to really just learn a little bit more and how, you know, most of the foods we should be eating should be designed to heal us. So that's just a whole other thing with where, you know, I'm, you know, always learning. So, you know, I'm still, you know, growing with understanding of this and that. And also recently, just personally, I had an accident this summer where I fell into the bus, had a stroke and a slight heart attack. And we didn't really know, my whole left side was paralyzed. So it was the most scariest thing I've ever experienced in life, and I've been through, you know, a lot of different experiences, just being a little world traveler and being a little adventurous, but the whole thing of, like, your body just kind of going numb, tripping in the street, hitting my neck on the side of a bus, then falling down, and then something happened where I couldn't really get up, but I was helped up. And then basically I was going to do a blog talk radio show at Temple University, so my whole mindset was to get on the next bus and, you know, keep it moving. But some lady who just came back from jogging from St. Joe's University up here in West Philly said that, yo, brother, you know, something's a little wrong with you. I think I want to call 911. I said, call 911? I didn't do anything. You the one that cursed out the bus driver. You know, I was like, call 911 for a crime. But she was like, oh, yo, you are hurt. And I want you to basically go to hospital. So I was like, I got a radio show to do in North Philly. I got to keep it moving. She's like, no, I think you need to get checked out. She insisted. Lady I didn't know from a can of paint, but, you know, God had her in the right place where she was parking. She saw me trip into the bus, and she's like, that's my brother, you know, just rolling in the street. She said, I just looked at you as like, you know, my brother, what's going on? And the bus driver was, like, just a little nervous. He didn't want to wait for a supervisor, you know, so he drives off. But she was giving him, you know, a piece of her mind. But she stayed with me until an ambulance came, and they basically checked me out. Yeah. And it looked like, it felt like I had a 30-pound weight in my, like, left arm. I couldn't really move it. It was going under control. So they put me, you know, checked me out, put me on a stretcher. They took me to Lankenau Hospital. And, yeah, I was having a little stroke, so they gave me the clot-busting medicine. And they didn't tell me that I had, like, a little bit of a heart strain or heart attack until, like, you know, a week into that hospital. Then they sent me out to Bryn Mawr Rehab, and those folks, they took care of my mother, like, about 8 years ago. So that's the place I really wanted to go. And I grew up in South Philly at the Christian Street YMCA, so I was a swimmer. But one thing, miraculously, them putting me in the water, having me doing different physical therapy exercises, but the swimming thing basically just kind of realigned my whole body, and the whole brain works, and my left side came back, like, in record time, so I was blessed. But my whole thing is really, you know, just the water basically blessed me, so I started really just hydrating myself, and that was one thing. When you basically get analyzed where your heart might be a little weak, they don't really want you to drink a lot of water, so that was a concern. So I kind of listened to what the doctor said. You know, that's really just good advice really right now, since, you know, we're all, you know, being monitored by them, and I'm not really, you know, really a pill taker. I'm kind of like on a naturopath thing, but, you know, sometimes you got to sit down, check your body out, and feel, you know, where you really got to go and, you know, get stronger. So I'm at the point really right now where I'm basically 90% better. I mean, I can basically, you know, do all my yoga, my left side. My grip is really almost back to where it used to be, where, you know, all the tests, I was half as strong as my right side, you know, and just everything that they had to do. And physical therapy was a blessing. Met some very beautiful people that, you know, their spirit was really just to help folks. And they just give you a little simple exercises, just straighten your hand and then just bending it down slowly, you know, playing with silly putty, picking up pebbles, putting them down with one hand. You know, they call it squirreling. You're acting like your hand's a squirrel eating nuts and putting it down. So simple stuff, man, just brings you back. And just the will to live and the will to, you know, eat the right things and knowing, you know, how things flow through your body. And definitely, you know, my whole thing about, you know, the water being something spiritual, just getting into the water and also taking in the right water and the right amount of fluids kind of got me back on my feet. But, yeah, the personal thing was the scare this summer, which basically said, you know what, you got a lot of knowledge in you. You've been doing this business, but now it's time for you to take it to the next level and show people that, you know, they still have a lot of life to live and can do certain things to rejuvenate the body. The body is really designed when you get the proper rest. Every cell is really trying to, reduplicate and basically regenerate. And sometimes, you know, the stressful lives that we're living, we don't give ourselves time to really relax our mind and relax our body, and that's where we really have to sometimes go and sometimes even cut off all these devices around us. Learn how to sleep, you know, well with silence. And one of my first physical therapists said, you know, brother, just take walks in the park. But at first, you know, they wanted me to have a cane. They said, don't be alone, so walk around the park. Now I can walk in the woods. My balance is pretty great, you know. So it's really just a blessing on how the simple things in life are just so important and really you appreciate it more. Just taking a good deep breath. Taking a good deep breath, walking in the park is a blessing.
You know, brother, I could listen to you talk, you know, for a long time because you send a lot of information and the words that you're expressing. But I definitely want to make sure that I get some key questions in that our listening audience or custom listener having, I guess, answer. And thank you for sharing that. I know that, you know, coming back from a stroke, you know, from individuals I know who've had strokes, they definitely didn't bounce back as fast as you did. So I know that your healthier lifestyle and the foods you're eating all definitely played a part in the way you were able to recover much faster. But next question I want to ask you, just kind of getting back on this whole conscious capitalism vibe, you know, we live as conscious leaders, we believe in living our businesses according to four key principles. And that first principle is higher purpose. You know, and so with that being said, what would you say is the higher purpose of Live Lives Starfire Cuisine?
I guess the higher purpose is really just the concept of the Starfire Cuisine is really the higher purpose is really showing, I guess, the will of God. What he put, like they say, the healing of the nations is the herbs and everything. So keeping things in its natural state and basically having a food that doesn't really tie you down, that basically goes through your body, kind of like it's like high-test gasoline in your system, you know, is basically going to keep you on the higher octane. And the better the food you eat, the less that you really even knee. So, you know, there's certain people that basically get on this whole thing and they become like breatharians. They eat little and basically are just into like breathing. And, you know, like how many times you ate? I haven't eaten in a few days. You know, there's folks that are on that level. But the higher consciousness really is to really keep things in the state that the Creator has given it to us and basically let that energy of the food heal us. And that, you know, sometimes even when the preparation comes down to it, I kind of definitely go into, like, a nice meditation and pray before I basically even start washing the vegetables and fruits and doing my thing. So it's kind of like into – I remember I used to go to lectures of the great Swami Krishnapada at the Institute of Applied Spiritual Technology. And, you know, he made a transition and is on a whole nother plane. But he was like, you know, when you come to my lectures, you're going to get fed spiritual food, you know, mental food, and basically, you know, it's all going to be physical. But at time during a lecture, you would see some of his disciples would go and basically, you know, set up their little catering thing. And everything was really just based on, you know, you might like sing certain songs. He takes you in different places, but there's a way that, you know, the intent of the hands that are feeding you, that basically if they're coming from a spiritual place, you'll get that energy and that intent and that love through the food. So my higher consciousness is really just trying to let that food be your medicine, and basically everything is prayed for, the preparation. It's almost like how people, Bill Withers sings that song, Grandma's Hands. Grandma's hands can touch things that basically, you know, things that weren't even really good sometimes coming off those plantation fields, they could basically work magic and turn, you know, scraps into like the best cuisine that you ever tasted. So that's sometimes how, you know, the Southern American diet is still, you know, popular around the world. But some of those things basically may not be good for us, but for the most part, we survived off of that. And it's really the love and the intent. That's what I was getting at, where Swami Krishnapad talked about the intent and the devotion of those folks that kind of loved his energy as he was dropping his Krishna consciousness, and how that basically can, like, uplift. And, you know, and that's really where the whole concept of the Starfire food is. We want to basically uplift humanity through the proper diet and keeping things in its natural state, and really just let the body just be in harmony. And one thing with that, there's a way that we even introduce, you know, everybody fasts, but there's a way that you increase your fast. Matter of fact, you fast when you sleep, and the first meal you eat is called break fast, breakfast. Breakfast is breaking a fast, so there's ways that you do let your body release things, but on certain times of the week, certain times of the month, and certain seasons, you want to extend the time that you basically don't put anything in your body so you can kind of let your body work out some of the things that we need. So everything is spiritual in the alignment or a higher consciousness when we really try to align things with the earth and consciousness of, you know, a higher purpose, and definitely some, you know, people have different names for this higher consciousness, but there is something that's just a natural order in the universe. So we kind of tap into that with the whole Starfire food. So there is a higher purpose, okay, but definitely we want to lift up humanity through the diet and the healing modalities that we can basically do with alignment and basically just proper guidance to intake and also releasing certain energies through, you know, your diet.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the best higher purposes that I've heard in doing the Conscious Capitalism show, because, again, at the end of the day, if we don't have our health, then everything else really doesn't matter, you know, so that's definitely important. So as we chat, my next question for you is, what are your core values for the Starfire Cuisine?
Core values, I would basically say the core values is really keeping things above board on I'm working at the Overbrook Arts and Environmental Center, and it's a place that's kind of sponsored by the community, but it's the dream of a brother who retired from the Philadelphia Water Company, and he basically has connections and always kind of connected with different communities that, you know, he's been exposed to kind of help him work his dream. So in a place that used to be, you know, in Philadelphia, we have state stores, not package stores or privately owned liquor stores, but there was a building that was abandoned. The state store had left, and it was just sitting there. And he bought the lot next to that and then the barn next to that. And we're converting this barn, it used to be like a farmer's market, into a healing center. But in between the barn and the state store physically, there's used to be a rock quarry, but there was a Superfund grant where we kind of exposed, you know, some of the things that were under there and kind of built a parking lot that has the porous tar and cement around. But the water basically is recycled, and the Philadelphia Horticultural Center has donated plants there was a grant that Michelle Obama had and Bill Gates, and we have other things that were donated, a playground and certain things. So he's looking at different grants. So now Penn State donated a wind tunnel greenhouse. So in the spring, I'm like the backup person on the greenhouse, but I basically will have a say on what we grow. So the whole principle is really keeping our ingredients ethically, you know, we're basically vegan, but we don't want no herbicides, pesticides, and we want to keep things in this natural form. And we can close off a lot of stuff in this wind tunnel greenhouse. So my whole thing is really just trying to present the vegetarian starfire cuisine in its most, you know, natural and purest state. And, you know, and the best way to do that, I mean, we can work with different farmer markets and keep things locally. You know, we always do things with the Pennsylvania Dutch and some of the other local markets that are kind of close, you know, to us in Philadelphia. But the best way to know how things are basically handled is to do it yourself. So I'm kind of like, you know, a urban farmer and kind of connected with other farmers. And I think maybe we might even have we have something called the pharmacy, which we work with Lincoln All Hospital. And the pharmacy is spelled like farm pharmacy, and we invite different growers to come in, and we have a community health forum. At least we've had two in the fall, and we'll probably have four this year, meaning like two in the spring, one in the summer, one in the fall, and one before it really gets too cold, where traditional healers and basically herbalists and regular medical doctors, we all come together. And there'd be, you know, it's in an art center, and also is a room that basically is rented out for lectures. We have a parking lot, playground, and also area to really see beautiful trees and different locally grown flowers and trees and bushes that attract the birds that are really natural to, you know, this Pennsylvania area. And, of course, Fairmount Park. You know, Philadelphia still has the largest park system of any city in the world. So we kind of like can generate, if you have the right natural trees and bushes, the wildlife will come and, you know, out of like the park a little bit and extend into like, you know, the neighborhood. So with the work I do at this Overbrook Arts and Environmental Center, we're trying to really, you know, do the pharmacy to the public. And we have farmers that bring us, donate, and, you know, the things that we buy. We haven't really physically opened up the cafe yet, but in 2 months we will. So I'm looking at a grant, really, and it's a grant competition type thing where you have to even produce your food, and we're going to have something where we're going to show off our raw food cuisine on May 19th. And, you know, we're claiming that, you know, we're going to have a victory to really have that startup capital to really, you know, get the right refrigerators and everything in. We have, you know, stuff already in, but right. This will be just live I've my, you know, brand separately from the Overbrook Environmental Center, but it'll be, you know, live I work in that environmental center, and, you know, you can come get my food there. So, you know, it's all about building communities and coming together to do cooperative, you know, projects and stuff. But our thing is really trying to grow our own food, and that's really where, and keeping things above board and keeping it natural and, you know, definitely vegan. So our whole thing is really just to, you know, and we involve, like, children of different ages come through and learn about the farm. They learn about plants. We got fig trees. We got strawberries growing all over the place.
Let me don't mean to interrupt you, but you said something I definitely want to kind of segue into. You talked about the fact of everything being raw and vegan. So my next question is, and you referred to this earlier, and you talked about who your mentor was, what is sunfire cooking?
Now, repeat that. I didn't catch it. What is
sunfire cooking?
Sunfire cooking, okay. Sunfire meaning that the sun is the greatest chef. The creator is the greatest chef on earth or in the universe. So everything is already cooked, meaning that, you know, you basically are just a preparer of using God's creations to make it flavorful for the palate, and that the food in its natural state can be enjoyed without putting the, you know, fire has only been in man, a tool of man for like only like 100,000 years. We've been on Earth a lot longer than we even had the tool of fire. So what we're really basically implementing is going back to nature, that there's ways that you can hydrate food, sprout food, and eat things in its natural state, where the metabolic enzymes from that food will basically connect with your digestive enzymes in a way where you don't feel tired, like being overstuffed at a Thanksgiving dinner. You know, everybody basically is trying to stay awake for that late football game after they ate that good meal. That's basically the opposite on how you really should be feeling once you start dealing with the sunfire or the starfire cuisine, that your, you know, alertness and your energy should be like that high test gasoline. So when we basically talk about eating flesh, we can basically make carrot pulp taste like tuna fish. We can basically make nut meats or nut pâtés taste like, you know, things that mimic, you know, if you want to eat a sandwich or a hoagie, I can basically make things relate to you still having that texture of like eating a sandwich or some type of a pita bread with almonds and cashews, you know, and, you know, you won't miss anything like chicken salad or turkey salad or something like that. So the whole thing is really keeping things in its salad state. It's making, it's really making salads and fancy things, you know, making taking rabbit food up to the next level so a human basically can enjoy the same thing that that rabbit will. But,
right,
you know, we're not trying to put that rabbit in the pot. We basically are trying to, you know, enjoy and sometimes put a fence up so he won't eat everything that the sun has, like, left for us. But so the whole sunfire and starfire food really means that we're not trying. The sun was already prepared everything to its natural level, and we don't really have to put heat to it, because anytime you put any vegetable or fruit to basically 118 to like 120, 25 degrees, you started killing the life force in that fruit, seed, or, you know, stir fry that you're really doing. So, you know, we advocate that, you know, during the wintertime, you know, there's nothing wrong with, like, you know, a three bean stew, this and that, you know, it's hot, but, you know, there's certain ways that you can kind of still get the heat from making, you know, cold soup, gazpacho, from, you know, cucumbers, tomatoes, and a lot of cayenne in it. So, you know, the whole thing is that, you know, the, you know, hot peppers are fruits too. So we have a lot of natural things that we kind of use to kind of, you know, bring the heat and basically help your body really, you know, cleanse itself. But, you know, so the whole sunfire thing is that the only heat that's needed is the process of the sun growing it. And we kind of keep things in its natural state and just make fancy salads. And, you know, you'd be surprised what you can create when you put your mind to it, just using some of the different tools that we have. Nice set of knives, juicers, blenders, dehydrators. So we can get fancy with the stuff. But a good grater, like with the beets, and sometimes the I can basically create raw dishes from, you know, cooked dishes, and it's really putting your mindset to how you basically break the veggie down. You know, people like sweet potato pie. You can make sweet potato dishes, and, you know, you could put it in a pie form, but I'm more or less, I eat the sweet potato as a side dish with cocoa yams, we call it. So I kind of use it, incorporate, you know, maybe coconut chips in it, but, you know, season it like you would season a pie, but the tiny grating of, you know, you can get muscles doing this work, you know, up and down on these simple materials. But, you know, some food processes can do it, but sometimes the love that you really put into it with, you know, your hand-to-hand doing certain things, you know, it kind of shows up on how the food is, like, received and loved when you basically, you know, put the love on it and put that work into it and, you know, just that love, blood, sweat, and tears to make everything turn out right. And I guess if people saw right. The vending event at the Conscious Capitalism, how I basically even serve my dishes with the earthy presentation with, you know, trees and calabashes. And from my travels, I collect wooden type of utensils to house, you know, the different salads I make. So the whole thing is like an adventure around the world when I even start talking about, you know, oh, where did you get that nice bowl from? So, you know, we can start talking about, you know, any and everything. And then the seasonings from around the world, you know. And met one of your mentors, the brother from Ethiopia, man, blessed brother. The next day he brought me some wooden bowls that he had, which, you know, I have used in two other events, you know, recently. So, you know, it's almost just amazing how when you basically show and you people feel the love and how, you know, you really are sharing certain things, you know, people come out and just add to your whole production. So that's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, now you mentioned some of the dishes that you've made within the Sunfire or Starfire cuisine. Let's talk about some of those a little bit more in depth. You talked about the carrot tuna. What are some of the other dishes that you make utilizing the raw vegetables?
Okay. One of my favorites that people really are liking, since I haven't really had the time to really concentrate on, like, the paradise pies, is Brother Reese, Dr. Reese Lathan basically kind of coined those terms of making those pies. But I can make pies out of nut crust, season them up with dates and raisins. You have a strawberry, like a wet fruit, and maybe dates and raisins, and you grind up the nuts. You can make a dough out of that. You dehydrate that, and then you can fill the pie crust with any fruit. Some people shred apples and basically season the apples up and maybe make like a date syrup with lemon and lime juice and make an apple pie that's raw in a nut crust. You can kind of like do, my favorite pie is when I have the nut crust, is there's a way that you half the mango off the seed and you cut that mango in slices real thin, like an eighth of an inch. You fan it down, and then you also make a jam out of strawberry and dates to kind of make it look like it's cooked, you know, towards the end. So there's different ways to kind of make that jam, like, you know, you can perceive as this raw pie being cooked. But I love the mango pie, and so those are certain things. And then one thing, when I don't have time to do pies, my favorite dish that I learned a little bit before, we took our trip in Jamaica in 2000, but Irise in like 1999 had something on Georgia Avenue at the Everlasting Life building where he was advertising his vegetarian retreat in Port Antonio a year before we ended up going. And he made this curry plantain dish, and I grew up, people always, you know, ate plantains cooked, you know. And even when we were there in Jamaica, there were certain people that were like, I'm not eating no plantain raw and this and that. But, you know, over the world and as you travel, as people get older, they do eat the plantain raw. But I basically have been teaching people, you know, from my travels that plantains can be eaten raw. And basically the way I basically do, I have a curry plantain dish, and the curry ends up being like a sweet sauce. And the plantain is cut also thin, real thin. And, you know, I add certain things to it, like there's a sea vegetable I may add into it. There's what else? Scallion tops. You make everything colorful. So when you really do the Sunfire thing, it's going to be it's almost like artwork. So it appeals to your eye first because you see all God's creations on it. I might do scallion tops. I might do cilantro top leaves, sun-dried tomatoes, and maybe even a few dates. Grate some ginger on it, lemon, lime juice, curry, and maybe a little bit of olive oil to make a little sauce. But anyway, that curry with the lime and lemon juice spreads around that mango, turns a little orange. Some people, I mean, spreads around the plantain. And you could do mango, you know, pieces in there. So, you know, you get fancy. So I can create a recipe, and, you know, the next day I might not have everything or have some different things, and the recipes are always evolving. You know, you use what you have at that time. And, you know, and certain things may be in season. It depends where you are in the world. But for the most part, you know, it's the method of really just combining certain things that are, you know, energetic to your body. So that's something that's like a dessert piece that I kind of use for people that have a sweet tooth. And then they're basically surprised that they're not really eating a banana. They're feeling something a little firmer. And, you know, it's a little more al dente, little, you know, harder to the bite, and it doesn't get as mushy, you know, unless it's really overripe. But for the most part, that plantain kind of stands up, and people get hooked on that dish. I would say my kale is interesting because I started doing kale before a lot of other folks started really mastering kale. But one of my great uncles was a merchant marine, and his father was a Filipino. So he always had exotic ways of cooking and really making marinades. And his whole thing growing up, I learned how to make adobo marinate, because that's what, you know, my uncle basically, he loved really just to, you know, I haven't eaten pork probably in 40 years almost, but for the most part, growing up, you know, you survive off of what, you know, was around. But I can season meat and season basically, you know, pork, beef, chicken, or everything with this whole adobo type thing. That was my method of cooking the collard greens or the kale greens, using the marinade I learned, like, as a child to do my kale. So, you know, I kind of use, you know, more or less the healthiest things, the Bragg's apple cider vinegar, or really sometimes don't even have to use vinegar, but the lemon and limes, the acid breaks it down. I might use Coconut Secret, which is an amino. It's almost like Bragg's, the healthy soy sauce, Bragg's amino. You can also get some amino that's made from the coconut, this company called Coconut Secret, and it even tastes like a better aged tamari sauce. But for those that are avoiding soy altogether, that's what basically I use really right now, and I kind of like prefer the taste over the Bragg's. But either way, you know, it's a nice sauce to really start your marinade for different kale and other vegetables. And sometimes, you know, I'll look at different cookbooks and basically may give things like a Thai flavor, or basically I say the whole concept of me cooking the adobo is basically a multicultural thing that's coming from the Philippines, and also the Spanish of conquering, you know, the Philippines, and the Portuguese, you know, everybody was over there. So there's always this a fusion of cooking. So the whole thing is really, you know, studying cultures, and over time with my travels to Africa, you know, sometimes the way we name dishes is never, you know, we're never really getting its due. So my mother had every time my father liked steak, my mother would do this cucumber salad, which was like a pickled cucumber salad. And I found the African name for that comes from the continent. But, you know, my mother was born in Chicago, but, you know, her people were from Mississippi. My father was born in South Philly, but his father and my grandmother, they're from Jamaican parentage. My father's father was right off the boat, but his wife's, her parents were off the boat where she was first generation, but, you know, those families kind of kept, you know, the ties when they come over here. So that was my father's side, the Wallace name is straight up from, you know, Jamaica. And so I kind of have, like, influences from, you know, the Central South and also the Deep Caribbean roots, and kind of like, you know, in that family line, and also having people that married, you know, other folks from, you know, the Philippines and stuff like that. It's interesting on how people come together and make these tastes and these flavors come together, which I kind of like inherited. But my mother's cucumber salad, I kind of turned it into a healthy dish, and I can get fancy with making a marinade of, like, you know, she would use, like, maybe white vinegar, dissolved white sugar, put some pepper on it, cut up some onions, and, you know, a vinaigrette, put a little oil on it, and it would be, like, you know, have a nice little peppery taste. But there's a dish called kachumbala, and it comes from Tanzania. And I wrote down here, you know, my mother's name is Orgy. Orgy's cucumber salad is mimicked in this mixture. She's from Chi-Town via Mississippi Delta cuisine, but Live Isle's version replaces the sugar with dates or agave, raw nectar, or maple syrup, and then I use seaweed to enhance the flavor and the nutrition. So I'd say, you know, you cut up 4 cucumbers, 2 red onions, 4 small tomatoes, some green chilies, some carrots, lemon juice, shake a little dulse or nori, cut up nori, so that's the seaweed. But the marinade would consist of like half a cup of sesame oil, maybe 6 to 8 medjool dates, that's the sugar, and then a quarter cup of tamari or Bragg's amino or Coconut Secret amino, and then a bunch of dill weed. You know how people like pickles and they like that dill. The dill is what gives those marinated pickles. So, you know, we use things that we're used to and then also introduce other things to boost up the health, because that seaweed and that dulse gives it that salt taste, but it also is giving you trace minerals that can help, you know, kind of help you cleanse out your, your thyroid glands, and definitely protect you from, you know, other toxicities and pull stuff out of your body and stuff. But anyway, that's just a quick thing on how I kind of turned, you know, maybe a nice-tasting cucumber dish into a nice, healthy-tasting cucumber dish using more of a natural type of vibe and, you know, fresh ingredients. So, yeah, and you know how people used to say, you know, open sesame, you know, in those cartoons and everything. That sesame seed, using a sesame oil, is one of the most, eating sesame seeds with these omega vitamins everybody's talking about, or you know, the omega-3s, omega-6, you know, you get so many omegas from that sesame oil, man. It's a wonder why they're talking about open sesame, because when you open that sesame, it's the healing modalities that's coming out of that little seed, man. It's just, you know, phenomenal. So the sesame oils, you see a lot of cultures use that. And the tahini butter, that's the peanut butter or the sesame butter when you ground up that seed. So you see that in North Africa and the Middle East, Arab cuisines, and basically even Mediterranean, but that's still the sesame seed. But definitely, you know, we want to incorporate that. So I'm using, you know, sesame oil. And then you can get fancy. When you finish the cucumber dish, you can throw some seeds on it to kind of, you know, enhance it. Mm-hmm. But some people don't like that getting stuck in their teeth. But either way, you know, they'll work it out. So, couscous. I do a lot of the grains. Well, couscous really is a pasta, but it looks like a grain, and you swell it. I don't have to cook it. And, you know, then you throw vegetables and fruits in there to liven it up, the bell peppers, you know, maybe carrots, maybe the leaves of cilantro or parsley, and salt taste, also a little bit of amino, you know. But you season the couscous before, you know, throw some cumin in there, a little bit of black pepper, a little bit of red pepper, and maybe even a little bit of curry, depending on how you really want it to taste, maybe some paprika. You stir the grain, then you put a quarter inch of water over it. Let it swell. Then you throw it into a bigger bowl. You chop up whatever, you know, cucumbers. Just real dice it up and, you know, throw everything up. Put a little bit of the salt taste. You know, you can put some seaweed in there if you want. The dulse, because that comes like a little pepper shaker now. And, you know, that kind of enhances it. But the last thing you want to do is a nice extra virgin olive oil. And you stir that, and when it's starting to shine at you, when you're looking over the bowl, you know, and you broke up all the grainy mixtures and everything, that's ready to roll. But over every grain that I make, I basically, you know, I do that with bulgur wheat and some other grains. I make a tahini or sunflower butter that goes over it, so it gives you that whole North African kind of flavor, Middle Eastern type of vibe where, you know, it's not going to be dry. But so my whole thing of learning from my uncle Donald Cruz, the whole concept of my technique is making everything stand alone with its own flavor. No matter what I use, a carrot tuna will remind you of, like, you know, a tuna fish type dish. My kale will be a marinated salad. If I did like a kimchi, that might be a little Asian spice with sesame oil, but it'll be a cabbage dish that'll be spicy. It'll taste different from the kale. You know, and so my whole thing is, right, taking you around the world. I might do a cauliflower dish. I could make the cauliflower look like rice or a rice pilaf, or I could give it to you with some of the taste with the Dijon sauce. Sometimes I get a high-grade mustard, throw a little relish on there, and the taste that you're already used to of putting on a hot dog will make you eat cauliflower like it's going out of style. Because one thing, the American taste palate is addicted to salt and sugar at a level, but I'm trying to give it to you in a healthier version where you'll taste something unique, but it'll be on a vegetable that you'll like. And kids are eating up this cauliflower like it's, like, ridiculous. But the carrot tuna is the hit, but then they taste everything. So it's really, you know, I do certain things that awaken the taste buds. So I can't really say what would people like, but sometimes all those things I mentioned, I could open up a pita bread, put it in, make a pocket sandwich, and the children will eat all that stuff right together. And as they bite through and hold that pita together, they're tasting a little bit of everything and making sure it doesn't fall apart on them before, you know, before it all gets in their mouth. So there's so many things that, absolutely, you know, absolutely, to really work with, man.
Well, it, definitely, you know, and as you're talking about food, especially the food you're talking about, I know it's definitely making me hungry, and I'm sure making our listening audience hungry. But let me we're getting near the top of the hour. We got about maybe roughly about 5 minutes left. So let me ask you this. Now, I know that it takes a lot of time to prepare. So can you talk a little bit about how you go about preparing to, you know, make this sunfire food?
Okay, so you could just put me in a farmer's market or a farmer's, you know, a garden, and I kind of think about, you know, combinations that I'm really going to work with to, you know, make things colorful and make things palatable. So on an average, I say I could basically do like a nice small banquet where, you know, a nice big meeting or type of event where, you know, if we can control the portions of, like, you know, plate size or whatever, where everybody can still, like, enjoy themselves, it might take me about a good 6 hours to prepare food for maybe, like, 100 people. But I'm thinking on the average, yeah, I would say 6 hours, but, it, you know, certain things I like to do, you know, maybe 2 days ahead. Like my kale marinate. The kale, the longer it sits, the acid, you know, cook down the vegetable to a level where it's really, it's almost like it has been in a pot and cooked, you know, over heat. And there's certain things, even like with the kimchi and my jerk rutabagas, and that's another thing. The root in the wintertime, we should be eating things that are in the earth and get that magnetic energy out of things that would still survive, the beets and the rutabagas and turnips. If they were still underground, that's what we were pulling out and basically living off that magnetic energy when, you know, most of the plant life is dormant during the winter. But, you know, there's things that grow underground, and those are the things that we really could be gaining the best energy from. But when I make the jerk rutabaga, some people say, what's a rutabaga? They know it's like a yellow turnip or something, as you explain it to them. But when they taste the way I throw this jerk season on them, and, you know, it's really simple to, like, season it up, but that the rutabaga will take on almost any flavor you give it. And, you know, when you just grate it up, you know, it's definitely palatable and, you know, it's really good. But it might take me about four. A nice large dish. I say, you know, I can basically do 2 to 3 dishes in an hour if everything's, you know, right in front of me. So it's almost like making it, you know, colorful. And I say, if you put me in a little farmer's market for the rutabaga dish, I might decide to use sesame oil with the jerk. I might want to make it colorful with, you know, sun-dried tomatoes. I might do some orange bell peppers, you know, kind of like throw a little twist in the colors, but, you know, the rutabaga and, you know, will basically turn a little darker with the, you know, the jerk and, you know, a little bit of Bragg's amino. But for the most part, the jerk kind of kicks it in, tomatoes and, you know, sun-dried tomatoes or even, you know, little cherry tomatoes, black olives. So some things, you know, I kind of like flag that Marcus Garvey carried, that red, black, and green. So you might see the rutabaga dish with some curry, maybe a curry little flavor, but it might have, I usually jerk it, but I might throw a little curry in there. But for the most part, it'll have the green leaves, black olives, and red cherry tomatoes. So, you know, it's almost like artwork as it really goes down. But, you know, when you see those different colors, right, it's like, whoa, what's that? But the taste is there. It has a little kick and definitely a flavor. The cabbage I really just did this week was kind of like a Thai-based cabbage where most of the time I make it like real hot with like different hot peppers. But this time I did use some Thai peppers, but, you know, the sesame oil kind of really brought the bang. I used Savoy cabbage this past weekend for this Keepers of the Culture, these storytellers and poets that, you know, kind of, they're all over the nation, but, you know, Philly has one of the, I think it was founded in Philly. But I did 3 events on the past 3 Fridays for Keepers of the Culture. And every week we had something different other than the staple usually is the kale and the carrot tuna. That carries it. And then I do a couple other dishes on the side. So, you know, so. But for the most part, I do a savory fruit salad that's everything. The definition of a fruit is something that has an internal seed. So there's a salad that I do with okra, avocado, tomatoes, bell peppers, I might throw some capers in there, but the thing is that, you know, I might use some basil, little lemon juice, and it's really a guacamole salsa that's not chopped up. So when you think about keeping things in this bigger state, it becomes like a unique salad where you can put it into a bread, you can put it into a nori roll. It's variations on the theme on how you even present your raw food, you know, cuisine. So you can put it in a pita, and, you know, it's all natural. So, you know, God has already put it there, so it's really just us doing the manipulation and your creativity, whatever you like and whatever you, you know, whatever taste you have. And the thing is that some people don't like certain things, or they weren't exposed to it. And there's a way that basically, you know, you can get the what they call the lady fingers is the baby okra. They call it lady fingers. You can cut that up, and it doesn't really give off the slime juice that everybody says, oh, okra can be slimy. There's ways that you get it when it's young, and, you know, you end up without even cooking okra. You could just eat it raw, really. And within that combination of that fruit salad I just said, you would never really even notice the slime. And I've done that with different dishes when I was, like, over in Europe, and people were, like, really tripping. And I had people of all ethnic groups, like, tasting this food. And when they basically just said, man, but that is a fruit salad, and nothing was really sweet in the whole thing. But it's really, you know, so I call that my savory fruit salad, which is really almost like, you know, a salsa that's not mashed up into, like, a sauce or a dipping sauce. But, you know, sometimes when you're selling food, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we actually reached the top of the hour, Chef Ivan, and I just want to give you an opportunity to share with our listening audience how they can get in contact with you, you know, or any upcoming events. Yeah, you basically got about 40 seconds, and you can share that.
Okay.
Website.
You can reach me through my email, which is Starfire Cuisine, spelled straight out, Starfire Cuisine, Starfire Cuisine @gmail.com. And phone number, the best one to reach me now is 267-403-2703. And if I don't pick up, you can leave a message there. And also really through Chris King at Conscious Capitalism. And pretty soon, the cafe, Live Ive at Overbrook Art Center will be opening up, and you can even call the Art Center, tell them to rush in on up, but you can reach me usually over there because I'm either teaching a class or volunteering over there all the time at 215-879-7770. Again, 215-879-7770. That's Overbrook Arts and Environmental Center, and it's near Overbrook High School, the famous school that Wilt Chamberlain built, and, you know, a few other people went through there, but, you know, we're right up the street from that high school.
Okay.
At the edge of West Philly.
All right, well, Chef Ivan, again, thank you for being on the Conscious Capitalism Show and sharing all the wonderful information, recipes, and tips to help us become better conscious leaders. I'd like to thank again our listening audience for tuning in this week to the Conscious Capitalist Show. And as Chef Ivan said, if you want more information or want to get in contact with Chef Ivan, of course, you can go to our website at www.consciouscapitalismdc.org. Again, that's consciouscapitalismdc.org. Or you can connect with us on Facebook by searching for the DC chapter of Conscious Capitalism. You can find us there as well. Again, thank you all for listening. And until next week, please continue to strive to be conscious leaders and live with intent. Thank you.
Thank you. Good day.
You can do it. Come on.